Bad teachers. Today's episode is about a bad teacher. You ever have a bad teacher? I've had a bad teacher or two. Maybe your bad teacher was unengaged. Maybe your bad teacher was looking forward to retirement. Maybe your bad teacher thought you were dumb and didn't care if you knew it and couldn't be convinced otherwise. Or maybe your bad teacher was just plain mean. Well, I'm here to tell you to count your blessings. Chances are pretty good that your bad teacher was not a serial killer, which is more than I can say for the boys and girls in the Lake County School District between about 1904 and 1908. I'll tell you the story about the serial killer, suspected serial killer, who was the school teacher in the town of Silver Lake after a little bit, but first I'm going to introduce myself. My name is Finn J.D. John, and I write a weekly newspaper column called Offbeat Oregon History. Runs in about a dozen community newspapers around the state. I've been writing it since 2008, and currently there's about 175 columns in the kitty in the archive. This column tells the stories of Oregon history that nobody knows about. Stories of heroes and rascals, shipwrecks and lost gold, Shanghaied sailors and Skid Row bordellos, and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries. What I'm doing with this feed that you're listening to now is taking a story from our archives and putting it out there every day in text and pictures or audio-only formats. Today's episode ran in the newspapers on September 4th, 2011, and I'm going to read it to you now. This is part one of a two-part series on a gentleman, and I use the term gentleman fairly loosely, a gentleman named Ray Van Buren Jackson, like to call himself Professor Jackson. Here we go. The morning after he'd gotten into a big fist fight with one of his students, the grade school teacher walked nonchalantly into the classroom and laid his .45 caliber Colt revolver on the desk. "Would anyone care to continue yesterday's scrap?" he inquired. No one spoke up. So the school day got started, a day not all that much different from any other in Professor Ray Van Buren Jackson's classroom in Silver Lake, Oregon, in 1906. One has to hope that this wasn't the typical educational experience for students in early 1900s Oregon. For starters, Jackson was, by any account, not a man you'd want to entrust your kids to. At the very least, he was an embezzler, a forger, a convicted felon, and an unusually cruel man. He'd come to the school district fresh from the state prison, where he'd served a total of 3 years for embezzling and even robbery. He may also have been a serial killer. Now, nobody figured that out at the time. It took 7 years of serious detective work on the part of Christmas Valley historian Melanie Tupper, sifting through old newspaper articles and court documents to make those connections. Today, 100 years later, it would be pretty tough to nail down actual proof. Still, if a preponderance of circumstantial evidence is good enough, it seems pretty likely that Tupper is right. She found an astonishing array of dramatic and sometimes deadly events. Run-ins with neighbors, disappearances of large sums of money, and high-profile unsolved murders. And they all swirled around Jackson's life, and they paint a pretty grim picture of the man himself. The full story is in Tupper's book, which was published in 2010 by Central Oregon Books. It's called The Sandy Knoll Murder. It's frequently misclassified because of its title and placed with the murder mysteries, but this is historical nonfiction. Here are some of the highlights of Professor Van Buren's career. Ray Van Buren Jackson grew up in Sodaville, near Lebanon. He was left-handed, and his teachers were determined to, quote, fix this defect, which they did, although he had to be held back 2 years in school to do it. The result was an ability to write with either hand, and that ability carried with it an ability to imitate almost anyone's handwriting. This ability would prove very useful later in his career, although it would certainly open doors for him that he would have probably been a much happier person had they remained closed. Jackson followed in the footsteps of his older brother by going to college and getting a teaching certificate. Everything seemed to be going well until the summer of 1895, when two things happened that Tupper suggests pushed him over the edge and into true psychosis. First, his favorite uncle was run over by a railroad train before his eyes at the bottom of Singer Hill in Oregon City in one of the most grisly accidents ever. Now, if you're at all familiar with Oregon City and how the geography is, Singer Hill is that highway that runs sideways up the side of the cliff, and at the top it reaches where the John McLaughlin house is. If you're familiar with that, you can kind of visualize where the railroad tracks are at the bottom through a kind of a channel that's between things. You can imagine how this sort of an accident could have happened. And by all accounts, it was a really bad one. The train collided with the wagon Jackson's uncle was driving, killing his horses and literally running over his head while Jackson watched. Then, when Jackson got home to Beaver Creek, where he was working at the time teaching school, he learned that he was wanted by the law for having forged a couple vouchers. Jackson went on the lam for a year or so, during which time he was able to continue teaching at Klamath Falls, but eventually he was caught and sent to the state penitentiary for 2 years. He was released in 1898, but a year later he was back in again, this time for a robbery committed in Baker County. And you have to understand, the Oregon State Penitentiary in the late 1890s, early 1900s, was a very, very nasty place. If you'd like some more information about what conditions were like in the state penitentiary, I can refer you to a free Google ebook by Joseph Kelly called 13 Years in the Oregon Penitentiary, which you can find pretty easily. Joseph Kelly, as you may know, was the famous Bunko Kelly, the Shanghai artist from the Portland waterfront in the 1890s, who was sent up the river for murdering a rival in 1895. As for Jackson, when he was released, he had learned his trade well. 3 years in the Oregon State Penitentiary would have been an educational experience for a clever fellow like Jackson. And when he came out of the prison, Tupper argues he was a completely changed and infinitely hardened man. I suspect that she's right about that. Now, if you're keeping track, the places in which Ray Jackson had established his bad reputation included the entire Willamette Valley, plus Jackson and Josephine counties in the south, and Baker County in the east. There wasn't much of Oregon left in which Jackson could get a fresh start. And people travel. If Jackson set up housekeeping in, say, Shanico or Bend, sooner or later somebody would travel through town and recognize him. But the remote stocklands of Lake County were different. The nearest railroad was more than 100 rocky, bone-jarring wagon road miles away, and Silver Lake was on the way to absolutely nowhere. You didn't come through town unless you were coming to town. Hard characters often came to Lake County to get away from the reputations that they'd forged in gentler places. Some of them took a liking to it and stuck around even after it was no longer necessary for them to do so. Now, as he left the state pen for the last time, Jackson did exactly that. He took a job teaching first through 8th grade at Silver Lake. He moved into the schoolhouse and started calling himself Professor Jackson, even though he was not credentialed as a professor, had no advanced degree, and had never taught above the 8th grade level. It's hard to imagine this happening today, a felon in charge of the children, a man who spent 3 solid years in the slammer, being put in charge of small children, and remember that one of those 3 solid years was spent for an actual violent offense, robbery. Is kind of different. But nobody seems to have asked any probing questions about the man's background, and perhaps Silver Lake's options were limited. Oregon teachers were very poorly paid in the early 1900s. In any case, Jackson soon established a reputation as a strict disciplinarian. He kept a pair of buggy whips in the classroom, and he used them, both the butts and the lashes, on older students who misbehaved. Accounts of his classroom management and things he said to others in the community suggest that his goal in meting out corporal punishments may have been more than just discipline, that he may have actually been deriving pleasure from it. He confided to a neighbor that he always took a single-action Colt revolver and a baseball bat to school with him. At least one of his students narrowly avoided serious injury when Jackson hurled a heavy glass inkwell at his head. Jackson's run as Silver Lake schoolteacher was relatively short. He was there from 1902 to 1908. But it didn't end the way you might think it would. He was promoted, not fired. In 1908, Jackson was elected superintendent of Lake County Schools, and he moved to Lakeview. It was in Lakeview that Jackson's career in education was definitively put to an end. Once he was in charge of the whole show, the temptation to make grabs from the till was apparently too much. 2 years later, he was indicted for embezzling money from the district, and he resigned in 1911. Apparently, when you're the superintendent of the district, you don't actually get sent up the river for this sort of thing. They just indict you, force you out, dust off their hands, and wish you luck. But after that, Jackson was involved in a number of ventures involving cattle ranching, retail business, and homesteading, but he never went back to teaching school. for which anybody who cares about children will probably say, thank you. The most extraordinary part of Jackson's life, though, was his personal involvement in at least six suspicious homicides, three of which were declared suicides, and three of which remain officially unsolved. That's not including his own death, which was also declared a suicide in 1938. Think about the odds here. Lake County is a tiny county. There aren't very many people there. Six suspicious homicides for one person? Very few people have even been involved with one suspicious homicide, to say nothing of six. What are the odds? We'll talk more about that, and more about those six deaths as well, in the next column, which will be coming up tomorrow. So you can wait for it, or you can cheat by going to our website and looking it up right now. It's at www.offbeatoregon.com. You can also, if you want to, subscribe to either RSS feed from that website. Both of the feeds are optimized for smartphone use, but they work great on a computer or tablet or a netbook as well. Everything here is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Thanks for listening. Drop me a line at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon, especially if you're going to be in the Corvallis area and have time for a cup of coffee. I'll be back tomorrow around 6 a.m. with the next episode, and until then, well, happy trails!